The sales robots have taken over, and they're decimating deals left and right, destroying them right in their tracks. On the AI for Sales podcast, our mission is to empower everyday sellers to embrace AI superpowers to build new bridges and crush quota. Dr. Joel Aban said it best in the AI for Sales book, "In sales, time kills deals. In AI for Sales, AI kills time." Join our hosts as we learn from the C-suite of the world's fastest growing companies about how you can leverage AI today to transform your sales revenue engine while being the best version of you.
Welcome back to another AI for Sales podcast. I am Chad Burmeister, your host, coming to you live from Austin, actually. I'm here for South by Southwest, kind of. It just happens to be going on this week while I'm here. But I do have a really cool guest. Ted Benson is the founder of Everpilot. It's an AI service that helps brands find and build lasting relationships with creators and affiliates online. Ted started out in this industry as an AI researcher, dove into the marketing space mid-career after realizing that so many of the people using AI were doing it to help their businesses sell more product. So I had a little foray into the influencer marketing space, helping a friend of mine, Darren, with all of the NFL influencers that he works with. So I really have enjoyed having a conversation with Ted, and I'm excited to have him here today. Ted, welcome to the call.
Thanks for having me on. I'm jealous of the barbecue down there.
It's very good. Last night I had the ramen just to mix it up, and that was pretty good too. But barbecue's on the agenda tonight. Yeah. So thanks for being here. Really great to have you on the show. As you've been listening to at the gym, it sounds like as well. So thanks for not only being a guest, but also a listener.
Absolutely.
I'd like to start with the question around how has AI transformed the customer experience? And you're coming at it from a unique vantage point in influencer marketing. So what are you seeing out there?
We're seeing from the customer experience, we're seeing that a lot of the messaging that people get about products to buy is increasingly coming through parasocial relationships that they're finding on Instagram, on YouTube. If you look at, you know, broad industry trends, more and more people, you know, our kids, for example, they watch YouTube, they watch Instagram, they're not watching NBC, CBS. And so in a certain sense, customers receive information about products through marketing, same as ever, but the vehicle through which that's delivered has changed dramatically. And that's changing the way through which marketing departments have to operate. It's changed the logistics of marketing. It's changed the way through which commercials are even cut and run and planned and designed and carried out across geo regions.
Interesting. It reminds me, my dad said he watched the new press secretary on the first day she was in the office.
Yeah.
And she said, "All right, NBC, all of you people, CNN, you get to go to the back of the room and we're going to bring in hundreds
they have a seat
of
now.
Podcasters." And now they have a seat at the table. And I think that's that shift in how people consume information is what you're talking about.
Absolutely. And there's some goods and bads, you know, as a consumer of media, there's some goods and bads that come with that. But to a certain extent, I think it's a huge net win for everybody, as long as everybody can make it work in terms of the content production side. Because at the end of the day, you know, I go on, I enjoy Mark Rober's content on YouTube. He's a nerd. I'm a nerd. I'm really genuinely interested in the kinds of suggestions that he chooses to make as a curator of the content that he delivers. And so selling through creators online, when it works, it ends up actually being a really virtuous loop for everybody involved.
You know, funny, at the breakfast this morning that I mentioned to you before we hit record with Darren, he met another guy at South By in the last day. And so he was at breakfast too. And he does lighting at large events. And he told me a story about Kia, how this basketball player did a dunk over a Kia and it was all lit up correctly and all kinds of stuff. And I pulled out my key and it was the first time I'd ever been driving a Kia ever in my life. And he was like, "See, there you go, full circle, how getting the right brand at the right place at the right time with the right audience can actually make a dent." And it was very interesting timing of the conversation.
Absolutely. Well, and one of the things that brands are having to become accustomed to, interestingly, is sometimes not getting the lighting right. So you'll see a lot of, with influencer marketing and creator marketing in general, you'll see brands shifting towards putting all their arrows behind a few shots on goal, you know, a few advertisements that have very high production value, to having to figure out where it is they want to fall on the spectrum of continuing to do that on social media, which some brands definitely choose to do. And you'll get a couple of really high profile, very high production value advertisements. And then others choose to shard the money horizontally across lots and lots and lots of folks. And then almost by definition, because the overhead is so high, you don't really have the opportunity to inject yourself into the production value as much. And so there's a whole bunch of opportunities for figuring out where your brand can find its customers in this space that maybe didn't exist with television, radio, movies.
Wow. Yeah, that's exciting. Well, and I think influencer marketing as a space showed up, what, 5-10 years ago? And I think it's not as well known, and I think in today's environment. So where are you using AI? Because Gen AI really showed up on the scene just two years ago at scale. How do you leverage AI in the process?
Absolutely. So we eventually, it'll probably be the case that many of us consume AI generated content on social media. We're not involved in that at the moment. What we do is try to help people scale relationships. Because when you think about it, you know, all sales, all marketing is about relationships. And the difference between, you know, a very high touch relationship and a low touch relationship is how much time, how much quality time you can spend on it. And so if you are a brand and somebody says to you, okay, this quarter, you have to go find 100 people on Instagram to work with, that's a pretty daunting task. Because anybody who's done sales knows if you want to find 100 people, you need to talk to 1,000 people. If you want to talk to 1,000 people, you have to reach out to 10,000 people. And that pipeline is brutal. And so marketing departments, not being sales departments, aren't used to managing these pipelines. And so one of the reasons why I think influencer marketing is not as talked about is because people are still trying to figure out, how do you just scale these relationships with all of these influencers? How do you find the right folks? How do you vet them to see if they're right for your brand? How do you recruit them step by step? And so it's done very manually right now. Folks literally sometimes show up and their job is using Instagram, and then they DM people that they think are cool. Our software helps automate that whole process, finding, vetting, recruiting, monitoring with AI, not to replace any of the folks in the loop, but really just to help you scale quality relationships that you're building.
Got it. Excellent. And I agree with you, the AI bot powered videos just aren't there yet. And will they ever be? You know, I had someone on the podcast a month ago that said, would you go to a NBA game to watch two teams of robots play against each other? And it was a real good question. Maybe once. I went to the Battle of the Bots in Vegas that my nephew would probably go every week to, but my nephew would be one of 100 people in the audience. It's not tens of thousands of people watching the Battle of the Bots every week in Las Vegas. And so I think the same thing goes here. People want to hear from and have the emotional connections with other people and not with robots. So
absolutely. Well, and with outreach, especially, you know, we've probably both been in situations on the sending and receiving end of mass email campaigns, kind of having touched sales, where, you know, those email campaigns that aren't personalized, that are robot emails, basically, are really easy to ignore. We all actively try to ignore them as receivers of them. And so if your strategy for doing outreach is just robotize, send it, you're not going to get a yield on that effort. And then when you do, you're probably not getting the cream of the crop in terms of folks who respond to you anyway. So as a salesperson or a marketer who's effectively trying to sell themselves to these influencers, what you really want to do is a better job doing a high quality outreach to a smaller, more targeted set of people. And then the question becomes, how can you use AI to enable that? How do you find better folks? How do you do a better job vetting them so that when you do have a conversation, it's a person to person conversation that's high quality? So I in my head, I always like to think, as we're chatting about how the product should work, you know, the president or the king of England, or, you know, a senator or a CEO, whenever they walk into a room, there's somebody next to them with a folio of notes that a thoughtful team has briefed for them on, here's what it is we're trying to get out of this conversation. here's what it is you might bring up during the conversation. And salespeople, marketers who are empowered with that can give a more personal touch to the job that they're already doing at higher scale. And so I like to think of the immediate impact of AI as being that. It's not that we're robotizing things, but rather that as people, we can just do a higher quality job of everything that we do because we've kind of got that assistant behind us with the folio notes.
Yeah, got it. Now, if I look at the other side of this, and that's the influencer themselves, when I dabbled in this for a year or so, I noticed that a lot of the influencers didn't know what their business value was in the market. Now, right. Tim Tebow knows, yeah. he knows how to monetize, you know, X hundreds of thousands of dollars for 30 minutes. Many people don't. Is that part of the value equation that you help the brands marry up with the influencers and how to monetize the influencers' influence?
It is. So, you know, in the industry, it's challenging because attribution of value in all of marketing is traditionally very challenging. You know, when you run a billboard in the subway, it's very difficult to track down how much that billboard traced to a change in revenue that you had. And so too with online sales. So with influencer marketing, there tends to be two different styles of it. One is affiliate marketing. So we've all been on Instagram or YouTube and you see somebody say, go to sweetgreens.com/Ted and, you know, tell them I sent you. And what happens when you do that is Sweetgreens gives the customer a discount, but then Sweetgreens also gives me a kickback. Mm. So that is called affiliate marketing. It's a subset of influencer marketing. Attribution is just A++ perfect with affiliate marketing. And so it's a spin wheel that when you can get it working, you can just find more and more and more folks to pile onto it and it works great. The challenging part is when somebody features your product in a video, but they maybe don't have an online sales link. And for all sorts of reasons, many brands are in that situation. You know, maybe they don't have a Shopify store set up. Maybe they're a service. Maybe they just don't like affiliate marketing. So the attribution can be hard. And that then translates into a real challenge valuing the influencers, to get back to your original question. And so the way that we approach it, and not all platforms and services do it this way, is we do an analysis on their content and the nature of their audience and your brand and its goals and try to come up with a qualitative fit score, almost like a matchmaking score. Like this person is a B+ match in terms of the quality of their audience. That's based largely on qualitative judgments about the content and the audience and the goals. Some platforms rely very heavily on other metrics like, viewer count or like how many likes they get. And those can be very strong as well. Those are good for a certain set of things. The challenge is they don't tell the whole story. And so a lot of anybody in this business, including us, a lot of it is trying to read the tea leaves across a bunch of different dimensions and figuring out both is it a good fit, but then also how much is this person worth to a brand?
Yeah, got it. Wow. It's interesting conversations. What are you finding are the types of brands who benefit the most, right? There's business to consumer brands, there's finance, there's so many different industries. Is there a group of industries that are most prevalent?
There's a few. One interesting observation is online AI in general can enable any large space to feel small. So I'm trying to think of an example without giving away some of the customers that we help sell. Let's say that you wanted to sell a very specific kind of, honey. Like maybe it's hot sauce infused honey. You know, when you go online and try to find a community, one way to look at it is you're talking to a billion people. That's very diffuse. So you're just a drop in a bucket. Another way to think about it is, well, if I can find some subset of people, you know, folks who maybe cook some cuisine at home that maybe pairs well with it, then all of a sudden now I can really try to saturate the space of people who that subset of the population enjoys, and you can get a lot of focus. And so in terms of brands that really succeed, one type of brand is the local company where they can find some niche online with a thriving community. And then they kind of act as a patron of that niche. They sponsor videos across that niche. And for everybody who's in that niche, they begin to say like, oh yeah, of course, that brand of hot sauce honey, we know them, even though they're just a local brand. And you can do that with, you know, actual geo-targeting. You can do it with niche targeting. The other style of company that does really well is the company that produces a product that other folks can then offer affiliate links for. And the product is very easily consumable. So just all the wheels are greased in terms of like this thing. It's fundamentally good. It's easy to market. And when folks market it for you, everybody's happy. Like everybody high-fives, people buy it. That's hard though, and a little unfair to use as an example, because that's a little bit like saying, well, you know, if everything's great, then everything's great. And so it's kind of tautological. But I think that niche targeting is the kind of thing that, you know, if pizza shop down the street, they only have one kind of niche they can target. And that niche is people who live a 10-minute walk to the pizza shop. Online, you can find all sorts of niches. And so I think that that's really the folks who engage in that, I think, do better than the folks who just
live
in the street.
I've got a lead for you, and I won't say it publicly here. I'll just say that they help people who have mosquito bites.
Yeah.
With little stuff that you put on, and you can buy this at Bernard's. You can buy, I think that's one of the places they sell through, and a lot of the major chains. And so part of their goal, you know, they hired my son right out of college and said, hey, you seem to have graduated in AI, but he didn't have access to all of this intelligence that you're sharing here today. So they would be a really interesting one to say, hey, are you fishing in Florida and you're getting bug bites? Go to your local, and they could drive demand for that local brand, and it'd be a lot of reach. I think the other part of influencer marketing is you don't have to influence 51 plus one. All you have to do is get a small group of people that have reach, and then the dominoes start to fall, right?
And that's absolutely And it gives folks the perception online as a media consumer. It can give you the perception of a brand being everywhere, even though they're not. They're just at the right people in the niche of content that Instagram is serving you up. So a lot of it is figuring out how to position yourself in that way.
Yeah, love it. I mean, I heard two stories. Ugg boots, when Pam Anderson was pictured on a newspaper in black and white, non-planned media, it was just there. That's when they blew up, right? It was like year four for this guy who moved from Australia. They did 1,000 and 2,000, then 4,000. Then that happened, and they did like 200,000. And then from there, it was millions and billions. The other example was a Maple Summit Lodge in Canada that's the biggest snowboarder's haven in the world.
Okay.
And it wasn't on the map until a famous snowboarder went, and they filmed that person there.
Yeah.
And then he put them on the map, and now they're,
man, I bet the locals were bummed about that. All of a sudden the long lift lines.
Yeah. No, it's all backcountry. Helicopter skiing.
Oh, amazing.
So
okay.
It's still niche-y. 48 people go at a time, and it's all backcountry. So but there it's high demand, and they can charge a lot more money than they used to back in the day. So very similar. So I love the concept of influencer. What emerging AI technologies are you seeing out there, whether you're using it yourself or in the sales process, or, you know, what's on your radar as we're talking about AI? What's exciting for you this year?
Well, one of the things that is very exciting to me that we make our own version of this, but we also use other people's variants of this internally, is AI report generation. So, you know, if you this is in the pro plan of OpenAI, what's it called? Deep Research with O1. We have an influencer content research tool that gives you these deep reports. We use a few other tools like this for research on different brands or research on, you know, different topics online. And it's almost like having a team of paralegals to work with. And so it's the kind of thing where if you're willing to put in a request for more information an hour in advance of a meeting, you know, it's going to take the AI 30 minutes, 45 minutes to generate the report. And gosh, I mean, 49 times out of 50, it is absolutely worth having done that. And so I think that for folks who before would have looked at their calendar and said, okay, I have these conversations that I'm going to have today, it's the perfect kind of tool that's not a what if this is good tomorrow tool. It's here now, and you can use it today. And if you're not using it today, you're probably competing against people who, you know, one of their monitors has open the Zoom call and the other monitor has open the list of report kind of bullet points and reports and industry research that an AI drafted for them 30 minutes prior. just to have on hand if you need it. It's not telling you what to do, but just acting as an auxiliary resource.
Yeah, it's like you hired a team of EY, $500,000 worth of experts already done. Funny, that's the thing I wanted to share with you that I brought up before this call. I'm glad we ventured into this area. There's a guy on my team who I would say would rank himself maybe a 70 out of 100 when it comes to writing an email summary, right? Okay. Typos and misspellings and everything else. But he's really good on the telephone. So he'll have a qualification call with someone, and 30 minutes later, Clary reads everything and puts it all into text, and he has to fill out the medic fields in Salesforce. So he goes and just asks Clary, based on my conversation I just had, please fill this out. And it summarizes it in such a meaningful way with no grammar failures at all.
Yeah.
And it takes his job and condenses it from, you know, 30 minutes worth of work down to 10 seconds of a summary.
Absolutely. And then he gets to choose how to spend that recoup time. Like I was chatting with somebody, this was years ago, at one of the really large banks. And I can't remember which one it was, but it was one of the ones where they have the branches everywhere. And they gave me some statistic that just left me with my jaw on the floor, that the folks who sit in those offices at those banks, what they're doing with their day is calling, you know, the top 15% of their book in terms of, you know, assets under management or something like this, because they don't have time for the others. It's not because they don't want to call the person with the smaller bank account. It's just that all that time it takes them to log those calls, to plan those calls, you know, you've only got 8 hours in the day that you're going to do that. And so if you're able to then say, okay, well, maybe the AI will fill out the call notes for me, or maybe the AI will generate, you know, here's the idea of the way that I'm going to pitch this person. Like for us, it's an influencer. For a banker, it's a client. That lets you, you know, double, triple, quadruple the number of people in your book that you can go through. And, you know, that's good for everybody. That's good for the customers who then, you know, maybe they don't want the business, but maybe they do.
They get a better service. Maybe their cost goes down.
Right.
There's wins for everybody that's involved that supply chain. Totally. What about ethics when it comes to AI? You know, the elephant in the room was always, you know, ethically, what's the morally right thing to do? Has that come into your business? Are there ethical considerations around deploying AI?
So we're not involved as much in the generation. So the conversation that's happened about reusing copyrighted content, we haven't directly touched as much with the nature of our business. But where we have noticed it is that certain organizations who hire our platform to work with them sometimes have very specific desires with respect to the kinds of influencers they'd like to build relationships with. And so you might find somebody who is a political organization who works on one side of the fence, and they only want to work with people that share their views. Or you might find other people who have a very specific demographic, you know, gender, race, religion, that they're looking to hire. And as best as I can maybe describe the challenge as it relates to us that we've seen it is, this is the kind of practice that just because people tell us in sales calls, this is what they want, has been already going on, implemented by humans for decades and decades. And the challenge with AI isn't that suddenly it's happening, but rather that a portion of that process is now being mechanized and done by computers. And what that means is still to be determined. And so, I mean, for us, we've just flat out refused to build the kinds of decision-making on certain, like race, religion, things like that, that we don't feel comfortable having a computer go and make those decisions for people. But what we have done for certain others is allowed people to build requests in which they can say, does the content appear to be political? Does the content appear to be violent? Does the content appear to involve alcohol or, you know, gambling? And so for topics that seem to be common themes, rather than making, you know, accusatory statements about somebody, we've just developed classifiers that identify when certain topics are present in the conversation. And that kind of lets us leave that harder call about putting
it's
that into your
like
business decisions for the person.
PG, R, X, you're in a category, but we're not going to comment or go deeper than that. I like that philosophy a lot. That makes sense. Wow. Thinking about where your company is with AI, where your employees are with AI, what recommendations would you give to a graduating class of seniors from college right now with the skills that they should focus on getting good at to be successful in this new world we live in?
I think it's never been more important to get comfortable trying things, failing, throwing it all out the window, and then trying something else in a positive, creative destruction kind of way. I think that being in this industry the past few years, AI specifically, has shown, I think, everybody that the assumptions we all make about what's easy and what's hard keep changing so rapidly that if you commit to trying to add value to the world based on some asymmetry of what's easy and what's hard, you could wake up next week and find that the thing that's hard is not hard anymore. And then if you had hung your entire self-worth or your entire career's worth on just achieving that thing which was hard, and then you wake up to find that it's easy, you're going to have a bad day. And so I think getting comfortable with the idea that a part of modern work, especially a part of computer work, is going to be not specializing in something that's hard today and will be hard tomorrow, but instead learning to surf the wave and kind of work. It's almost like jazz instead of classical music. You've got to practice jazz. I think that's more important than any skill they could learn.
Wow. That's just so well put. I think of there's people who own laundromats, for example, or that's been like their generational thing that's passed down from this to this to this, and they've created a cash cow. And it's like, hey, look at me. I'm amazing. You know? And you're right that one day they'll wake up and say, oh, you mean a robot arm can do all of that? Even the pressing on my shirt? you know, what are you talking about? And the same thing goes the higher up you get in an organization. I just asked AI, hey, if I want to retire at this age, what would smarter people than me do? And it broke it down into categories. And I would just say, okay, go deeper than that, right? If I was a CFO of a Fortune 100 company, how would I look at it differently? And it just spits out the answer book. And that's a good example because I don't view myself as a CFO. But if I can ask AI to be the CFO for me and ride shotgun, I'm now a CFO.
Yeah. But I think that it's unnerving. I mean, it's unnerving to developers too. I'm an engineer. I have been my whole life. And, you know, we're going to be among the first to get really displaced by AI. AI programming is very good and it's getting better. But then when you look at the fact that, you know, the world hasn't suffered from scarcity for a very long time, actually, we've suffered primarily from poor distribution. You realize that, you know, we actually, like, the idea that machines can do work for us isn't new. Like the idea that we have an abundance of food isn't new. And really the core human problems are these problems of helping kind of everybody lift each other up. And so in a way, maybe there's a way to look at it, which is we can spend more of our time now focused on some of those distribution problems and less just on raw production, which I think preoccupies a lot of us. It certainly does in my job, like the raw production of a thing. And so I think that there is some rosiness to the kinds of automation that's happening now, even though, you know, everybody's a little bit spooked for sure. I think if you're not, I wonder what you're drinking.
Yeah, that's right. Well, what a great conversation. We've been talking to Ted Benson, who is the founder of EverPilot. If people want to reach you, Ted, it's just everpilot.com, right?
Everpilot.com.
Super simple. Everpilot.com. Check it out. If you're a brand looking for influencers, which is the new way of reaching people in your market, check out Everpilot. Is there any qualification criteria? Do you need to be a multi-billion-dollar company, or who do you serve, Ted?
We serve across the board. Our sweet spot is if you're an internet native DTC brand. So if you're the kind of brand that also sells through Shopify, we would love to chat with you.
Excellent. Well, I hope you find your next big customer because I've been known to be an influencer myself from time to time in a very niche audience. So we'll see what happens. Thank you, everybody, for joining another AI for Sales podcast. Ted Benson, thanks for being here today.
Thanks for having me.
Hey, you made it this far in your AI for Sales journey. Want to augment your sales growth? First, leave us a review and then visit www.scalex.ai to claim your free strategy session today.